This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up, Atlanta. This is the morning shift. I am Squid Billy. He's the All-American national champion, former Atlanta Falcon. Michael, don't ask him what the P stands for, Johnson. Yeah. And this is the morning shift.
Ooh, that Mio must be flowing from over there, my friend.
I'm angry. Mio I'm angry and I'm hurt.
Got a good nap yesterday. What's the
I'm angry,
angry
and I'm hurt. Well, we'll get to the angry.
Mikey P and Squid, by the way. Tiff will be here at some point, I'm sure.
That's what I said. I mean, did I not introduce us?
I'm just saying that the intro says that Tiff's here, but, you know, well, every now and then, once every few days.
Anyways, so I'm working out yesterday, and, you know, Monday, Day-Day knows Monday's leg day.
Is that
Tuesday.
That sounds weird, dude.
Well, big pause. The reason why Day-Day knows that is everybody who wants you to think they're serious about working out does chest on Mondays. It's just like, because they do probably chest twice a week because that's all they care about. The real, they do leg day first. Start the week right. That way, by Friday, you're walking right again. You can go play golf. And
thanks
everything.
For educating me.
Yeah, I mean, you needed to know. You probably work
3 days,
out for the show.
4 day split, 5 day split.
So it's chest day. And normally when I do chest, I don't like to use bar stuff a lot. I like to do dumbbells. But yesterday the dumbbells were kind of crowded, so I had to do the bar incline.
That ain't good.
I done tweaked. So, you know, I got these short ass arms. And so when I'm
what do you want, like a Smith machine? You couldn't quite get it to the next rung to hook it?
No, I was just a regular one. regular bench. And I'm reaching to re-rack, and I felt it go, man. I just felt it go straight up my back, right to my my trap right here at my neck.
Oh, you pulled a muscle.
Yeah.
Oh, in the neck.
Well, it I think it's from the back, because when I if your back will go out, it'll pinch a nerve that shoots up to through your neck and your shoulder. And right now the you see, look at me right here at the top of my trap at the neck is where the most pain goes, but I can feel it go into my shoulder blade.
Is there anything that screams this is 40 worse than pulling a muscle in your neck?
Not really.
Like, I mean, that is like peak. That is like peak midlife, like early midlife deal,
so,
right there.
Last night before, so the other reason, the reason I said I'm angry is because we raced last night, and there's a couple of things that happened that made me mad. AI cars suck. And before we raced, I went upstairs with Amy got me a couple years ago, that the Theragun thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the gun.
Like, with the ball on top, vibrates.
Yeah. It boom, boom, boom.
Massage
booms.
Gun.
Yeah, boom, boom, booms your muscle. And
is that what it does?
So I go upstairs looking for Amy, and I can't find her. And so I go, and I see the light on in the nursery. I go, oh, God. I go in there. She's got clothes sprawled out everywhere, like baby clothes.
She's nesting, dude.
She's absolutely hungry.
She is
she
nesting.
She just goes in there and sits in the chair.
She's like mama bird pulling pine straw and putting it in the right spots to make sure that baby is nice and comfy.
So I go in there, and I'm like, I need your help. I'm sore.
Help me.
I'm in pain.
Here she is, 9 months pregnant.
Yeah.
And she's massaging.
And I'm like, I need you to run this thing over me. So, she's like, tell me if this, tell me that. I'm like, oh, it feels so good. Bum a boom. She's like, boom, boom, booming on my shoulder with the Theragun. And then she goes, yeah, this is a longer massage than you've ever given me. I swear.
At least you didn't say
straight up.
Yeah, anything straight worse up. Than that. Yeah, at least
and
you didn't
I
say
said,
anything worse than that.
Well, no, you, no, no, no. I read that, that's why we're having a girl is because.
Yeah, is that what happened?
I know how to last longer. So I immediately guilt immediately hits me like just such like
yeah, dude, I better like, feed her
shame,
sore, man. Golly.
Shame and guilt, and I was like, but I'm injured, and then I realized that she's over 8 months pregnant.
Oh man, better get busy on that push present, man. Better get busy on
I gotta,
push present.
Well, Jaren and I have been in contact, and I actually haven't heard from him. I need to reach out to him, but hey, man, the due date got moved,
Solomon,
up, so you're gonna tell me.
17th floor, tower
place in Buckhead.
Hey, Danny, let me ask you this real quick before we get to some of these other bigger stories. What do you think will go first? Because I was putting together a Which One Wednesday today. What do you think will go first? Bo's workout schedule or his truck cleanliness? Which one do you think is down the tube first in the first 6 months of fatherhood?
Well, I'm gonna go with the workout schedule.
Workout schedule.
That's
a
smart man because the truck's already dirty. I look like I live out of my truck already.
I do too, man. I used to take such pride in how clean my truck was, and since fatherhood has started, it is an absolute dumpster bin. Like it's awful.
What's funny is my truck will be semi-clean until football season, and then it literally looks like I live out of it. But
yeah, which I mean,
kind of do.
Like, and then you know, when you get home or whatever, you're so busy during football season. Like, the last thing you want to do is. You know, go through all this stuff. You know it's going to get dirty again. But, you know, I'm like, I've got, you know, just like Day-Day probably, I got the kids' seats in the back, the booster seat, whatever. I got the gym bag. I got, you know, whatever snacks I have to take the kids when we pick them up from daycare. It's just, I mean, Ridge handed me his goldfish packet yesterday on the way home, and me thinking it was empty, I just decided I was going to put it in the center console, kind of turn it up, you know, blindly turn it upside down. I got about 15 goldfish in the bottom of my center console now. Got to go get that situated. That's not good. So
yeah, you got to get
sure the answer incoming.
Well, look, just eat them, you know. Don't let them go to waste. I do
a saturated version of a goldfish.
I will say this. This is pretty cool. Before we get to the front page, because the Hawks and the Georgia Bulldogs both played big games last night in hoops. You know, the other night when we had our meeting, the other three stations in our cluster, and I think ours participated as well, they threw Big Tigger, who's also having a kid, they threw him a baby shower.
Yeah.
And I, you know, they gave him some presents and everything. And so yesterday, Amy says, hey, I got to go to this meeting for work. It's a lunch meeting for our group of the people that she works with. I go, oh, okay. Because she kind of works remotely. She travels around offices and works from home. And she texts me. I wake up from my nap, like seven pictures, and she's like, oh, it was a surprise baby shower for me. They threw
nice,
me, and it was down in Buckhead, like some club in Buckhead. It
nice.
Was up in a high rise, and so they threw her a baby shower. So she got like the Big Tigger treatment. So she got a baby shower.
Good.
And,
at least one of y'all's well liked.
Yeah, right? I know, right? Yeah. And so it was kind of cool that they did that for her. I was like, oh, I wrote back. I said, oh, you got that treatment. I was like, I don't get that.
Yeah,
but I was happy for it. Really made her day, man. Because
good for her.
Amy's a sweet person. She's very, you know, she cares. She, unlike me, she cares about people and what they think of her. Like, she wants to be liked. She wants to be happy, right?
Yeah, she doesn't want anybody to dislike her.
And
that's fine.
And they really took care of her, made her day. But they had this cake from New Orleans. Like, it's like, I don't know if it's that baby cake or whatever.
It's
king
cake.
But it's like the cinnamon roll cake.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I went out there and had a slice before we raced last night.
Oh. Did you get the baby?
I not in the little slice I had, but it was so good. She's like,
so good. It's Mardi Gras, dude.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. All right, Day-Day, let's hit the front page. Front page is brought to you by Padley. Sell your home for cash fast. PadleyBuys.com. That's PadleyBuys.com. The Hawks fall last night. 127-122. Giannis drops a triple-double, 26-12 and 10. It'd be nice to have one of those triple-doubles like that every once in a while. Quinn Snyder was out with flu-like symptoms. Look, it was you beat a really good team in Memphis. The Bucks are surging to expect to go back-to-back nights and get wins against two of the top teams in the league. And I know Milwaukee is not a top four team in either in both leagues right now, but they're still a pretty good team, a playoff team.
Yeah, they definitely are. And look, man, we got to talk about the schedule for a minute. The fact that the Bucks, you're on a back to back, a traveling back to back, and the Bucks were they beat you to Atlanta. Like, the Bucks have been here for a couple of days. I believe their last game was Saturday. You had every opportunity to win this game though. To me, the stretch run last night in the fourth quarter was a microcosm of the Atlanta Hawks season. You pull back even with the Bucks, right? Just like you have gotten back to 500 at times this year. You allow an easy offensive possession for them. I believe Brooke Lopez got a dunk. And then there's a couple floaters from Trae Young that just don't go home. That, to me, is a microcosm of everything we've seen out of Atlanta Hawks the last couple of years. Now, I do believe this team's heading the right direction. I believe they've added the right pieces. I think they're all doing the right things. I think they're focusing on defense more. I believe I would buy stock in the Hawks' future. But last night, when you look at the last 5-6 minutes of this game, they were down 8. They do all this work to try to pull back even. And then they don't give themselves a chance in the final stretch run and end up losing by 6 points. The spread was 5.5, by the way. Ding. And so, you know, shout out to Vegas on that one. But just a frustrating end to the game last night after it felt like State Farm Arena came alive when the Hawks pulled even. Just a couple easy baskets for Dame Lillard, Brooke Lopez, and Trae Young. Can't put them home.
It was a good game. I followed it all night. I thought it was pretty good. Look, over the other side, Georgia just got their third straight win. Beating Florida kind of was like a shot in the arm for this team. They beat South Carolina. Now, South Carolina is one of the few teams in the SEC that is just not up to par.
No bueno.
But 73-64.
Why is that, by the way?
Well, remember they had Frank Martin there for a while. Frank Martin took them to a Final Four.
Yeah, and then he fell off a cliff.
I think
the whole program did.
I love Frank Martin, but he's kind of a drill sergeant type coach. I'm not sure if that is the type of. I think that's kind of it's kind of like the Brian Kelly style where you yell.
Yeah, a little bit rough around the edges.
Look, I think it's needed at times. Maybe sometimes it can be too much. But anyways, Georgia looks like they may be surging into. Now, look, I think they still have to take care of business. At least a win and maybe two in the SEC tournament. But they're where they need to be right now. They're surging, and they have a chance to make the tourney.
Yeah, and this is exactly what we said Georgia needed to do down this stretch run. Just don't trip up. And again, this is a South Carolina team that went into last night 12-17, not one of the better teams. And on the flip side, look, man, you have to look no further than just down the road when Auburn heads over to Texas A&M and gets upset last night. Now, Auburn's still probably looking at, you know, everything in front of them in terms of their seeding. But, you know, this is a situation where just stay where your feet are at, man. You don't need to do anything crazy down the stretch run. Get to the SEC tournament, win the games you're supposed to win, and do the things that you need to do down the stretch to make sure that you're status quo. Like, you don't have to, like, do anything crazy if you're Georgia, I don't think. I think just go in, you know, don't get bounced in the very first game maybe of the SEC tournament, and you'll have your spot in that NCAA deal.
Yeah, I would love to see Georgia make it. I want as many SEC teams as possible. It's good for Georgia. I think Mike White is the perfect coach to reset and build this program to a. I don't know if he can take you to that next level of like Sweet 16, Final Fours. You never know. This team could make a run. They play in one of the toughest conferences in basketball right now. But that said,
they're playing well at the right time. Like, but that's the biggest thing.
That said, it's a good spot. Real quick, Chris Sale looked phenomenal yesterday. 4 innings, give up 1 walk, 4 strikeouts, no runs. He's had no runs allowed in his spring. So far this year, Drake Baldwin, though, was great behind the plate for him. I know that they talked about it. I know Chris Sale, said at one point, told maybe Dave O'Brien from the Athletic that, you know, he loved what he brought behind the plate. That's what you needed to see. It was a pretty everyday lineup other than Ozuna. But good for Chris Sale, good for the Braves.
Good for Drake Baldwin, because you started solidifying yourself as that next option, which I think a lot of people kind of expected that he would. I don't know why this just popped in my head. Maybe we should talk about it when we come back from the break. There was a thing going around the other day on social media. It was like, name the most random catcher you can think of. And when you just said Dave O'Brien, the first thing that popped up, do you remember Charlie O'Brien?
I do.
The gold curly locks.
The curly mullet.
Was he the backup for Javi Lopez, or was he pre-Javi Lopez?
He was
in the 90s?
Backup for Javi Lopez. In fact, I'm pretty sure Charlie O'Brien.
When you just said
O'Brien.
Dave O'Brien, and I was thinking catchers, thinking Drake Baldwin, I was like, man, you remember Charlie O'Brien? Like, that's definitely the most random catcher I can think of in Major League Baseball history.
Free agency is, what, a week away? 4 p.m. next Wednesday. Free
Give
agency
it to
starts.
Me, baby. Let's go.
Legal tampering starts on, I believe, Sunday at midnight, which would be Monday morning. Could the Falcons' next edge rusher come from Las Vegas?
Ooh.
I don't know. Maybe. Mm. Talk about it next. Morning Shift Sports Radio, 929 The Game. And
the Odyssey app.
This takes me back to my childhood. Love listening to music that makes you feel old. As Bo teased, could the Falcons pass rusher come from Las Vegas? That brings me to this. David Deshant of The Athletic put together a list of the top 10 free agents at every position, and we are focusing on the top 10 free agent edge rushers and whether or not the Falcons could land any of these guys. Josh Sweat from the Eagles, Khalil Mack, the Chargers, Malcolm Kuntz from the Raiders, Chase Young, the Saints, Hassan Reddick from the Jets, DeMarcus Lawrence from the Cowboys. You've got Deo from the Colts, Joseph Osai from the Bengals, Baron Browning from the Cardinals, and then, of course, there's Aziz from the Giants. And I wanted to make sure I had some of the last names correct. So,
yeah, Aziz Ojulari is a guy that I like. I like Aziz. That's probably a guy that on this list, to me, I just don't know what he's going to command, but I think he's the guy that could come here and play. I think he had his best year of his career this year, and that they had a pretty good pass rush. DeMarcus Lawrence is a guy that's kind of been, if I'm not mistaken, he was injured all last year, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yes. He's obviously a guy that's been good in the past. The name that was linked to the Falcons, I believe last week, in another article by another projection, was Malcolm Kuntz. From Vegas. I believe I'm pronouncing his last name right. He had a really good 2023 as kind of his breakout year. He had 8 sacks. And before that, he had 2 sacks in 2 previous years. He didn't play at all last year, was injured. But he's the one that's kind of has been linked to the Falcons. The problem for me with that is what the money he gets. I've looked at some projected contracts from some of the, like, Over the Cap and Spoke Track are the two that I trust the most. They both do a phenomenal job. They think he could get up towards, basically, it's a Drew Dahlman effect, where around $20 million a year because of the limited number, his age, and the limited number of standout pass rushers at his age. Because guess what? He is an age, and I didn't even think about this before, but we were watching something with Pete Prisco, who's a friend of the show, Pete, and I know a colleague of yours at CBS, Jeff, and he said that the premier age that he always hears is 26 years old for free agents. That's what they want.
Yeah.
So if you are saying the number he could fetch is, what, $20 million is what you're
saying?
That's
what some have projected, and a two-year $20 million deal.
So then, and that's what
for 10
it
sacks.
Might take to keep a Dahlman. Like, you kind of get where I'm going. Is it worth it to try to make something work and let Dahlman leave to get an edge rusher?
Yeah. I think it is. Mike, I want you to answer this more than me. For me, yes, because I think Ryan Neuzel is close enough to Dahlman, but I can't explain the why.
Well, let me back out a little bit away from Drew Dahlman. It's not so much Drew Dahlman as the position. It's a lot harder to find a pass rusher, as we well know in this town, than it is to find a good center. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. That's why you usually don't see $20 million being thrown around for centers. Now, every projection I've seen has Drew Dahlman as a top 8, top 10 free agent right now in this period that's upcoming. I just think that when you look at what the Falcons have done recently, and that is Ryan Neuzel, that is Javon Gwynn, that is re-signing Matthew Hennessy off the street last year, those guys can be serviceable. Not to the point where they'll ever be what Drew Dahlman was, but, you know, a 20% drop-off doesn't really equal $15 million in terms of that. Now, I look at this list of free agents, and I got to tell you, you get Josh Sweat, who I think will get probably a 3-year deal north of $50 million. He'll have some of that longevity built into his. But outside of that, you tell me if I'm wrong. I'll go Khalil Mack, Malcolm Kuntz, Chase Young, Hassan Reddick, DeMarcus Lawrence. Let's just stop at 6. Because I think there is a lot of intrigue around Aziz Ojulari because he's from Marietta High School and he's obviously from around here. Do you not get 2 through 6, Mack, Kuntz, Young, Reddick, Lawrence, and think they're probably going to make $20 million per, but I'll be shocked if the contract is anywhere north of 2 years? Like, they all look like Danielle Hunter kind of contracts to me. Like, those kind of situations where you want to bring them in and you're excited to have them, but you're not going to sign any of these guys long term because you probably don't believe in what they could be long term, because they're all a little bit longer in the tooth. And Chase Young, a little bit injury riddled. Like I said, DeMarcus Lawrence. It just feels like every single one of these guys you could fill in the blank with 2 years, $40 million, and that's probably what you'd walk out the door with.
Chase Young has 22 sacks in 5 years. Now, he has battled injuries, as you said. 22 sacks in 5 years got me $13 million last year with the Saints. I'm good. I'll pass. I'd rather pay a younger guy with, and I know he's coming off injury too. Now Chase Young, hell, he's just about turned 26 himself.
But he got to Washington in the Rivera era there.
Mm-hmm.
Was drafted by them, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and he had in 20, and he had, to his credit, he had 16 and a half sacks. His first 4 years, one of which he played only three games. Since then, he's had, that's not right. He's got more sacks than that in his career.
I was going to say, he kind of has to, but
he's got 28 sacks in his career. So he had a bunch of those our first 4 years, what I'm saying. He hasn't done much. He's actually become more of a run stopper, I think, than anything.
To me, does he not remind you of like an ace reliever that just enjoyed an incredible period in their career, but you keep bringing them in like a non-roster invitee kind of thing?
You know,
like if there was a football non-roster invitee, I feel like that would be Chase Young.
You know who he is to me? A poor man's Jadeveon Clowney. Amazing,
poor man's
amazing physical specimen as far as like what he was in college. Dominant, came in, had a good. I don't know what you consider 7.5 sacks anymore, because I hear here, I don't know if Katie gets criticized for getting 6.5 sacks every year here, and then you know, so if you can't tell me that's great when Chase Young gets 1.5 sacks more as the number one overall pick.
I think it was two. Yeah.
So I would say that. But yeah, I think Jadeveon Clowney is much better as a run defender. I think Jadeveon Clowney is probably considered closer to one of the better run stopping edge players in the NFL in his career. That's why he keeps picking up places, and he can give you 6 to 9 sacks a year.
It goes back to, too, we've talked to Rusty a ton this offseason as we build towards, you know, the combine and everything else, about guys like Mykel Williams and how hard it is to find a body like that. And it seems like even, and I'm not saying this about any guy in particular, but even if guys like don't love the game of football, if you have a body like that and you know you can go out and get and put the other team at risk of one sack per game, like you'll find a home as long as you want to do it. And There are some guys in the NFL that kind of fit that profile. I don't know that he loves football, but I know he can probably get us one sack a game if he's healthy and we get in the right situation.
Well, and you mentioned, like, Rusty and all of us have talked about Shamar Stewart's stats in college. And Rusty brings up Trayvon Walker, right? And he says, well, he hardly had any sacks in college at Georgia. He's had, what, I think 20 and a half in the last 2 years in his three-year career. Chase Young has 30 and a half in college, and he has, I think, 28 and a half right now as a NFL player.
Yeah.
And you look at Trayvon Walker, who had, what, maybe like 6 in his career at Georgia, and he's already got almost as much in 3 years of a career.
But go back to the injury stuff you pointed out, too. Was it I can't remember exactly what it was for him. Was it an ACL?
It was an ACL in the 21 season. He actually, or 22 season. If I'm not mistaken, he tore it here. I'm almost positive. ACL?
I thought it was like an Achilles or a calf.
Positive he tore it here.
You know what's interesting, too, and I want to go back to your own Katie point about the production he's got and how much of this production is timing and the outlook, really, timing. Because there is going to be people, and you got all the way down the list to Aziz Ojulari. I point out the fact that he's Georgia guy, Marietta guy. He had 6 sacks last year, and he's playing, he's playing with a number of pass rushers up in New York that you really love as pass rushers. There are going to be people that clamor for Aziz Ojulari to come here, no matter what the contract costs.
Absolutely.
And his output has been on pace with exactly what Arnold Ebiketie has been over the course of his career, feels like.
And it's just like with people clamoring for Georgia players to come here. But as Mike pointed out, his stats and what he's done, but it's on par with Ebiketie.
Yeah, that's the thing is quarterback, edge rusher, they're the two hardest positions in football, I think, in 2025, to get the right guy. Because every year, guys sign the free agent they think he's got, doesn't pan out. They draft the guy, doesn't always pan out. You don't know who's going to pan out, who's not. That's why they're so hard to get. That's why we have been the Cleveland Browns of edge rush. Because Cleveland has, like, remember that jersey that's out there?
List.
Yeah, the quarterback list. Well, that's been us with elite edge rushers.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of the situation.
I agree with you.
But the That's you don't know what Braylon Trice is going to be. If you're looking to pair that 12 sack a year guy with an Arnold Ebiketie, who then would probably become you would probably take his numbers and go from what six and a half a year.
Yeah.
And I would say you could easily give him three more sacks a year if he had an elite guy opposite him.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if I'm ready to go that far. I will say, and this is the nuance and the caveat that kind of comes with this conversation. I think a lot of the talk around Arnold Ebiketie and the frustration comes from the fact that it's the timing of the sacks. Right? It's not like most of the time where Arnold Ebiketie gets sacked, it's not like at that point you absolutely have to have it in the fourth quarter. It's not like the closer version. The way we all, and we, I know, God knows, I used to block him every day in practice. We always go back to John Abraham and him being the closer and everything else. And you knew that in the fourth quarter, when the other team was trying to make that drive, that he was going to rush that edge and take somebody down. That's just not the version we get out of Arnold Ebiketie. His six sacks or whatever it might be, it just doesn't ever seem to come in the clutch situations. Well, and that's the problem, I think, for a lot of Falcons fans.
And that was why the disappointment of Matthew Judon came. If Matthew Judon would have had seven sacks here last year, but I think he had like five and a half.
Right. I think he was right on par with Arnold Ebiketie. I think he was.
So if let's just say he has nine sacks, you would have been like, well, that's not what we wanted. We thought we got more. But if they'd have come in the most opportune times and it helped you win ball games, the fans' thought process of him would have been completely different.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's a good point that you bring up about the closer thing, and that's what really you're searching for. Because what happens is that guy can make the play, to your point, in those moments, but he's also getting the guy opposite of him sacks because you have to pay attention to him at all times because you never know when it's coming.
Well, you want the guy that is the Myles Garrett, that type of guy, where you sit in coaches' meetings with the opponent and they're describing him as being the game wrecker.
Mm-hmm.
Just destroys your entire game plan. So you're looking for that. And then the question is, what can they afford to pay for that, given the situation that this team is in?
Yeah, you don't want the guy that they're that when you go to those meetings, Steph, that you're talking about, that you just want to have a guy on your defense that's like that, but it's not quite the same when it's like, yeah, number three, we got to watch out for him and late in games.
War Daddy.
Yeah, I've only sat in a couple of meetings where, okay, you're facing with the Raiders.
Oh, yeah, Max Crosby.
So I've had coaches describe Max Crosby the same way, Myles Garrett the same way. Those are the type of players that you're hoping to acquire here and have teams look at them like that.
They talk about our safety that way, Jesse Bates, but, you know, you'd like to see it coming off the edge every once in a while.
When we come back here, where's Devontae Adams going to end up? Does it have a lot to do with where Aaron Rodgers goes? That's maybe part of their plan. We'll discuss next when we return here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 19 on the Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, and Aaron Rodgers, the Jets, they've parted ways. And now they have also released Devontae Adams. So this from ESPN, 3 weeks after Aaron Rodgers, you know, was let go by the Jets. Now here we are with Adams. And so they have given permission also to wide receiver Allen Lazard, another Rodgers favorite, to seek a trade before the start of the year. The new league year, that is, on March 12th. So this is what sources told Adam Schefter. So in all likelihood, he went on to say that he, too, will end up being released as well. So what does this all mean? Are these guys both going to try to follow Aaron Rodgers wherever he ends up going?
I think they're going to go wherever. So Devontae Adams, I think, has a little bit more. Lazard's a good player, but Devontae Adams, I think, has more in the tank and is going to have more of an option. That said, I'm not quite sure if he's just going to follow Aaron Rodgers blindly.
I mean, they basically just release the previous members of the Packers. That's what they did.
Yeah, and they had to. Look, they're clearing house. This is a reset. This is an organizational reset from front office down in New York, and it's the right moves. They've got cap hits for it. That was a terrible. That was a terrible move by the Jets to go get Devontae Adams. It never made sense. You'd already fired your coach by the time you made the trade. I just never understood. They were chasing something that was, to me, it was never going to happen.
Yeah, well, and that's a long list of questionable moves that have been made by that franchise. I don't think it's as cut and dry as saying he's going to follow Aaron Rodgers. I mean, what if Aaron Rodgers ends up with the Las Vegas Raiders? You're telling me that Devontae Adams is going to go back to the Las Vegas Raiders and be a part of that? I mean, it just there's a lot of caveat. There's a lot of nuance to the entire conversation. I don't think we even have a hint of what the future looks like for Aaron Rodgers. So it's tough to kind of look at it and say, well, Devontae Adams, Alan Lazard, those guys will be,
well,
you know.
I think with that question is how much power is Aaron Rodgers going to have at the next place that he goes? Because he clearly had a lot of it with the Jets before things started to go off the rails.
Well,
those guys were there.
Tip, I think my counterpoint to that is that how much power does Devontae Adams have? Is he a guy that would really want to go back into the organization that shipped him off? You know, and he doesn't really have a good taste in his mouth over, He's got to grow as his own guy at some point, apart from some of these quarterbacks. He's an incredible wide receiver. I know that he wants to win at some point, and I think if given the opportunity, he's going to go to a franchise where there is, you know, an opportunity to play in the playoffs and do some things that he hasn't done throughout his career.
I disagree with you on that, but I think the reason that both of those guys ended up with the Jets is because Aaron Rodgers wanted them there.
Well, I think it's a good question. What I would tell you, though, is that if history has showed us anything, quarterbacks running organizations doesn't really work. Aaron Rodgers and the Jets didn't work 2 years. I know he had the injury, but it was brutal last year. It did not work. It caused a ton of people to lose their job. Russell Wilson going to Denver and getting free range on doing whatever the hell he wanted to do, having his office, his own quarterback coach, didn't work. I don't think, you know, I don't think it worked. And I think if you're out there looking, I would say, look, you can come here, Aaron, and you can run our offense, or we'll run a system. We'll work together, run something that you're comfortable with that we think can win. But we're not just going to do your offense, your core receivers that you wanted to play with. We're not doing that because it hasn't worked for you, and you were your best under Mike McCarthy, and I say a couple years under LaFleur when you ran what they wanted to
do. And that was my question, because you're wondering now, based on how things transpired in New York, do you want him to come in there and have that kind of say with your team? If you still think he is the quarterback that he used to be, you know, maybe you do. If you don't, then maybe things look a lot different.
Yeah, I don't know how you can see what happened in New York, and then and I use the Russell Wilson thing, not to bag on him, but it's another example of how one player running a locker room didn't work. Or let me rephrase that: doing whatever they wanted while everyone else followed, you know, the other 50 something players followed their own rules, the actual rules. And I don't think it works. Not in football.
I do think there are certain circumstances that it could work for, but I think that both those guys you just named are a little bit detached from most players in the locker room. I think you can make the argument. I mean, Aaron Rodgers being, you know, plus 40, trying to, you know, basically coach the team. Same thing with Russell Wilson. He doesn't strike me as a guy who is, you know, in lockstep with a lot of guys he's playing with on offense.
So let me ask you this. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to put you on the spot. 2013, the Falcons are coming off a 2012 season, lost the NFC Championship game. They very much made – now, this is not the only reason – this season went bad. There was a ton of injuries on that team. But you made a couple of moves to kind of maybe get this team where you thought we'd get them back in the race. And you tell Tony Gonzalez he can attend a week of training camp, right? And then he had like pretty much the rest of camp off. He went home to his family. How does things like that play in the locker room where you guys are all grinding it out and then one player just essentially can do whatever they want?
Well, I think the nuance to that is he's not the quarterback. Right, and also believe in the daily work ethic of a guy like Tony Gonzalez. You know that when Tony Gonzalez shows up, he's going to hit the ground running, and he's probably going to outwork 75-80% of the people on the team once he gets there. Right, and you understand that he's just at a different point in his career. He's got his zeros. He doesn't need football. I don't think anybody ever had an issue with it. You understood that Tony, once he's present, is going to outwork everybody on the team. I don't know that that's possible from a quarterback standpoint, because they're so important to every other player on the team to kind of get accustomed to what they're doing. At tight end, I can put it in another tight end. I don't remember who it was, maybe Reggie Kelly at the time, or Justin Peele was gone. I don't remember who they were working with back then. But It's like you can put them in, and he can kind of resemble a little bit of what Tony's supposed to do come training camp. And so I just think there's so much more depth when it comes to the quarterback position of not showing up or, you know, not doing some of the things you need to do. Minicamp, obviously, a big sticking point with the Jets last year.
I want to be real, too. I didn't do that to put you on the spot or to call out Tony. I just said it because it feels like, to answer your question, Tiff, every time a player gets some kind of an immense amount of special treatment or some kind of free reign or whatever you want to call it, the seasons always end up like just massive failures. And those are the three that come to mind first and foremost that I can think of. And I know it's not – look, the 2013 Atlanta Falcons season was not cursed because Tony Gonzalez didn't attend 2 weeks of training camp. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying every time there's an example of that, it never feels like it turns out well for the organization of the franchise.
Can I play devil's advocate for one second?
I would
make the argument that the reason it seems like that is because the teams that win, the stories become the winning and not whatever the offseason storyline was of them not showing up or somebody holding out or somebody not getting their money or somebody showing up late. Like that, those storylines are always the storylines because there is a downtrodden season. When teams win, the story becomes the winning about, oh, man, that was a crazy last-minute pass, or did you see that go route or that 60-yard explosive, or look how good the run game is and things like that. Those storylines always take a back seat when the teams come out and are actually operating on all cylinders and the coaches are doing all the right thing.
I agree with that. I also look at guys like, and I don't think, Calais was managed differently, right? So I think there's also the take on how well regarded or how well in high regards they are held throughout the league, even on a team that wasn't the Dolphins team. Like everything went wrong for them last year, right?
Yeah. But, well, Calais is a guy that they give those veteran days off during the week. And I think it's different. Julio got those too.
There's a lot of people in Atlanta have gotten those.
Yeah. It just depends on, like, I think it depends
necessary.
On how good you are. Like if you're Julio Jones, you probably can do whatever you want. And I think the same goes for I think there are two different types of players, two different types of people, but
I think they're different management. So I think if you manage a guy's health a day here, a day there, I think if you give a guy 2 or 3 weeks off during training camp where he's in a different part of the country, it's different. I think the same with Aaron Rodgers saying, you know what, I've got a trip planned, blank off. I won't be there during minicamp.
So I think it's how they're viewed within the locker room. And I think there were some things coming out on the Jets end, but I think a lot of the guys were saying they didn't care. But didn't some other stuff come out later, if I remember correctly?
I know
there were questions that they were asked, but some of the guys that were asked did say they didn't mind Rodgers handling his business elsewhere.
And granted, I think it matters if you're a quarterback, and I also think it matters if you're sitting out practice and present or if you're just completely not there.
And that's,
like I said, there's caveat, there's nuance to these conversations. I don't think for the most part, like when you talk about veteran days off, anybody north of 30, especially when you're Calais' age, is going to receive those. It doesn't mean that he's not part of practice or watching film or whatever
exactly.
else is going on. And
agreed.
So I think that, you know, I think those conversations for guys like that are different. I also think, like I said, quarterback is probably the most important position in sports when you look at the success of a football team. So I don't know. I'm with you going all the way back to the original point. If I'm a franchise, by no means am I handing the keys to Aaron Rodgers offensively and being like, you got it, bro. Like, let's roll. I don't need Nathaniel Hackett to be a part of it. I don't need Devon. If I'm all those guys, and this is one of my original points, I'm going all my separate ways. Like I'm ready to start anew if I'm Alan Lazard, if I'm Nathaniel Hackett, if I'm anybody else involved in this conversation. I would like to get my own situation, grow as a player, grow as a coach, whatever I need to do, and seeing if I can hit that next step before, you know, the end of my career comes in that role.
Well, one thing is certain when it comes to the Jets, these moves with cutting Adams, they got major cap relief, clearing $29.9 million from this year's cap. So that's more than doubling their previous cap room. And that is going to allow them to be a bit aggressive in free agency.
Yeah, this allows Aaron Glenn. Yeah, this allows Aaron Glenn to do everything that he wanted to do and more. And I think it's the smartest. It's just what you need to do. Too often, it's not like he had a win now roster. He had a good defensive roster. Offensively, they were a mess. You know, I heard I was, I think, NFL Network yesterday or ESPN1. I was watching some of their franchise tag deadline coverage, and they were like, well, Sam Darnold, you know, they don't tag him, and you kind of think of spots, and they mentioned New York. And speaking of guys going home, and they were like, well, I don't think that'd be a move for New York. And I was sitting there, and take aside the Sam Darnold going back to the Jets part, right? Just knock that over. I would find hard-pressed that Aaron Glenn would go sign a quarterback who he pretty much ended at the end of the season. Because that the last
book's out on this guy, and I wrote it.
The last time they played the Vikings, that's the Lions, when Glenn's at D.C., remember what they did to him? Remember they had the ball like three times in like 6 minutes inside the 10, and they had eight plays is what it was, because they went for fourth down, they got a penalty, and then they went for fourth down again, and they didn't get it. Well, it was brutal.
I think let me throw this at both of y'all. If y'all were head coaches in this cycle, do you think you'd be more likely to sign a free agent or go draft a guy? I think it's a tough question, honestly.
So what, Russell Wilson's out there, right?
There's a number of guys. Like, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to be in that conversation. There's a few free agents. Sam Darnold being one. They're obviously not franchise tagging him. I mean, Justin Fields. Do you look at, Cam Ward, Shadur, Jackson Dart, whoever else may be in the draft? I think it's a really hard choice.
I think it is, too. If I had a shot to go get a Sam Darnold, I probably would take it. But that depends on what my – let's say I, was a team that needed defense, needed an edge rusher. I would go get the quarterback in free agency and then take one of the guys in the draft.
Here's the problem for me for the Jets. If you don't take a quarterback this year, then you're going to draft one. And if you want to win games, Aaron Glenn's not going there to lose games. So – you have a defense that you can win with. Now, you have to address a couple of situations. But you have a good defense, especially a guy that's defensive-minded like Aaron Glenn. I don't expect that defense to have a huge drop-off. That said, you could win 7 to 10 games if you have a quarterback that can manage what you want to do and you can find a run game. So if you don't believe in any of the quarterbacks in the draft and you do it that way, now you're trying to get higher up to get a better draft-class quarterback. But then if you pick one and in a bad class and you reach for a quarterback, now you might have just put your future on the line.
And I think Aaron Glenn knows a thing or two about that, having come from Detroit, where they were able to revive. Granted, he was on defense, but he was still a part of that team, still experienced that with the resurgence of Jared Goff coming in.
Yeah.
And they had quite the defense before all the injuries took place this past season. So he would know a thing or two about, being able to ride with a veteran. And maybe he wants to do that again, and maybe he knows what it takes to do that, or he decides he wants to grow his own talent.
Well, that's the thing. It's just a tough decision. It really comes down to what you think about this quarterback class, and that's going to decide what you do in free agency. And that's why the combine was important for them to meet with all of them.
By the way, I was reading this story from Rich Savini of ESPN. He did also say that with Lazard, his days being numbered, it's unlikely that a team will trade for his $11 million salary, which is non-guaranteed. So his release or trade would create another $6.6 million in cap relief for the Jets. All right, when we come back here on the morning shift, free agent pass rushers is the name of the game, and we're focusing on the Falcons. Who could they go get? That's just ahead here at the top of the hour on the morning shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game.